time for a walk through the garden with Steve Stone. Every week, Steve will give us timely tips for caring for our plants. He'll answer your questions and give us expert advice. Now here's a walk through the garden with Steve Stone. Good morning, Steve Stone. We're walking through the frosty garden. Probably not quite frosty, but close.
It feels pretty. If you haven't been outside yet, you definitely need to grab a jacket.
Yeah.
It's pretty chilly out there this morning.
Unless you're like me and you're going about 10 feet between the car and the door. But if you're going to be outside.
For this late in May, it's unusually cool, call it.
Yeah.
With the storms that blew through last evening and kind of the gray overcast today, it's a little nippy out there.
Happy Memorial Day. Jump in your pools.
That's right. Yeah.
We chip the ice off first, but jump right in the pool.
I feel really bad. We had a client that we got a pool in for, and we promised her it'd be in by Memorial Day. It's in by Memorial Day. She's got all of her kids coming home from Indy and Columbus, and all their grandkids are coming home to have a big old pool party, and this is the day she planned it. Oh, I feel terrible. That's horrible.
Yeah, well, nothing you could do about it.
Well, I guess they're going to have to sit around a gas grill.
Well, I guess probably the best thing you could have done for her is not get it done so she wouldn't have all these people over.
That's true.
maybe you should have messed that up somehow.
Either that or she needs to really crank that heater up.
Yeah.
So, hey, a lot to get to today. Last week, talked a lot about bugs and insects. And the cooler temperatures are certainly going to have an effect on the activity of the insects that are out feeding and procreating and all the fun things that they do. Still seeing a lot of issues out there. I had talked a little bit about the galls, the different gall problems, which the one of the very noticeable ones is the oak apple gall, which obviously you'll see on oak trees, and it is produced. The insect will sting the leaf and lay an egg, and then kind of mess with the development of the leaf, and the leaf will actually make this gall, but it looks like a ball that's maybe the size of a quarter, somewhere between like a nickel and a quarter, and it honestly kind of looks like a little green apple hanging off the bottom side of the leaf. And I saw a couple of trees this week that had the galls already on them. Person was very concerned about, you know, what it was going to do to the tree, and the amount of damage done is unbelievably minimal. So treating is completely not recommended. Any kind of an application is not recommended at all. The problem is there. The damage is done. If it's a small enough tree, you can reach up and grab those leaves and pull them off and stomp on them, the galls, and get rid of the eggs that are in there. That's the best control measure. If it's a huge oak tree and you can see them up in the canopy, don't worry about it. It's nothing to get excited about. looked at a number of maple trees this week, and I think I talked about this a little bit last week. There's a couple different types of scale that we'll get on maple trees, and you usually will find the insect on younger trees. And when I say younger trees, you know, trees that have, you know, been planted maybe in the last 1 to 5 years. The young stems and branches have a very thin bark on them, and the vascular system is immediately underneath that thin bark, and these scales will hatch and move about, find a spot, and then kind of set up housekeeping there. And it has, like I'd mentioned last week, a syringe type of a mouth part that pierces the bark and then just sucks the nutrients out of the stems. Looked at some red maples last week that had a pretty significant. And that's something that you definitely want to consider treating. if you get enough of a population on these plants, the insects will actually take so much of the nutrients and so much of the sap out of the stems that the stems will start to die back. And so treating those can be imperative to keeping the tree alive. This time of year, with the temperatures that we're having currently, horticultural oil works extremely well to control those. I looked at a Japanese maple this week also that was looking thin. The foliage was really, really, really thin. And if you're not necessarily looking specifically for these insects, it's pretty easy to miss them. Sometimes they just look like little warts on the stems and branches. Also, they look like lenticels, too. Lenticels are the little white marks that you'll find on, again, smaller branches and stems. So they really kind of look like a bunch of lenticels on a stem. And so, again, they're sometimes can be really easy to miss. But as you start to see dieback and very, very, very thin foliage, definitely tells you that, you know, something's wrong. And so you need to look a little bit closer and see what you can find. And again, treatment is definitely recommended because, again, with the population getting higher and higher, you're certainly going to start to see dieback. And left untreated over, it's not something that's going to happen the first season, but left treated untreated over a 2-4 year period of time, that they have the potential to completely kill the tree. So, again, if you got something that you're just simply not certain, you're always welcome to give me a call, stop out at the shop and ask for me to stop out, or you know, give me a call, text, or an email and send me some pictures. I'd be happy to try to help you out.
So you've talked about one kind that you definitely don't treat and one kind that you do. I'm sure most people like me are going, I don't know what to. So, like you said, ask somebody that actually knows, instead of going ahead and wasting time and money treating something or letting it go and not treating something.
Yeah, that's
there's no universal rule when you see something.
That's a really outstanding point. Yes, there are insect, you know, issues and disease issues that will, you know, crop up over the summer. And certainly some of them are going to, you know, require some sort of care, some sort of an application. You know, again, dealing with insecticides, you always want to be careful. You always want to, you know, follow the label directions. The label directions are definitely the law, so you need to follow the label directions exactly the way they say.
And overuse can a lot of times cause more damage than you're fixing.
Absolutely. I mean, it's, you know, just, if it tells you to put a teaspoon in and somebody says, well, you know, I'm really pissed off, this thing looks bad, I'm going to put, you know, 6 tablespoons in. I mean, in 99.9% of the cases, that's not just because you're putting more in, you're going to get more effectiveness. You actually, again, you're going to be wasting money, you're going to be wasting time, you could be harming the environment. So you need to follow the label directions. But the first thing you need to do is you need to ask questions. You need to, if you're not super familiar with what's going on or what's happening with a plant, you need to, you know, call a nursery professional, have them come out, take a look. Because again, there are a lot of things out there, diseases and insects, that you maybe just don't need to treat for. There's a threshold, you know, of treatment, like on those apple oak galls that I had mentioned before. Oak apple gall. Yeah, they look unsightly and you know, they might, if you're really super into your lawn and landscape and trees, they look unusual. So, you know, certainly, oh my goodness, that's an insect, I got to treat that. But again, there's no treatment now, once you see the problem, that's going to fix the effects of what the insect did. So to waste time, effort, money, you know, spray insecticides out there, because again, I had mentioned, I know last week when you're applying insecticides, a lot of times, if you're, you know, doing it correctly, you're going to kill the insect that you're going after. But, you know, by default, you're potentially going to be damaging, killing beneficials. So there's lots of beneficial insects out there. So the best way to treat is to be very careful how you treat and be very selective on what you're applying and when you're applying it. And so you're just trying to kill the problematic insect, and again, you're just not out there. Well, this plant's got scale, so I'm just going to spray everything around the house. Well, no, if there's not an issue with the other plants, why are you wasting your time, effort, and money on treating? So, because again, you're going to screw up the ecosystem around your house. You're going to potentially be killing beneficials. And if you kill all your beneficials, then you may create an opening for the problematic insects to come in and start attacking, other plants. And so that would have otherwise been controlled, by the natives that are already there. So again, you really need to call somebody. In this day and age, everybody has a smartphone. Google, certain things that you're uncertain about. But again, do some research, because there's, some things that need to be treated, and there's some things that just simply, again, this oak apple gall, there's absolutely zero potential on a mature tree that this particular problem is going to cause any long-term ill effects to the tree. Yes, it looks unsightly. Yes, you really don't want them there, but as far as going to the time, effort, and money, dollars to treat for it, there's simply no reason to do it. And there's a lot of, honestly, there's a lot of issues, insecticides and procedures that are out there that, I don't want to say unqualified. Sometimes they're very qualified, but they can feed you, a line of BS that says, well, you got to treat this or this is going to happen. And I've ran into that before. It just simply isn't true. So they're trying.
Somebody's trying to sell you something.
They're trying to get in your pocketbook to, yeah. Oh my goodness, you got to treat this. And thank goodness, in a couple of different occasions, people had asked me, and I'm like, that's not true at all. that somebody's just trying to, sell you a $150 application or $200 application that A, you don't need, and B, is going to basically have zero effect on what you're trying to accomplish. So again, but all the local guys I know are pretty good guys.
Yep. Well, if they aren't, they won't be in business long. there's too many other good ones, and word of mouth gets around.
Yeah.
In the big cities where people move in and out pretty quickly, and neighbors don't necessarily know neighbors, and advertising can do a whole bunch. Slick advertising that may be not telling you the truth, that can do a lot, because people talk, but they might have told their neighbor, but now their neighbor lives in Kansas City, and somebody moved in from Chicago, and they don't know that.
Sure. So. Yeah, I'm amazed. Some of the different places we work, like down in Troy, beautiful, awesome, homes and neighborhoods. And I just had an appointment this week with a lady, and they had moved in from somewhere. I don't even remember where. But it just seems, I guess we take it for granted, because I'm sure you can. I go to every home in our whole town.
Yeah.
And everybody that lives there.
Yeah.
And probably everybody that lived there prior to the people that are living there.
Most of them I know the prior instead of the current. But yeah.
And, she lives in a beautiful neighborhood with a lot of wonderful clients, because we work for most of them. They don't know anybody. Well, it's like, did you meet so-and-so? I don't. I'm like, well, that's your next door neighbor. She's like, well, how do you know all these people? And it's like, well, I don't know. We've worked for them, and I don't live under a rock, and I don't come out my front door or whatever. I mean, it's different. I guess it's different.
Yes. Yeah.
Because around here, everybody knows everybody, which, sometimes is bad, sometimes is good. But again, when you live in a neighborhood and you know nobody, like in Indian Heights, if say, somebody moves into Indian Heights, they don't know anybody, we're just, the people out there, everybody knows everybody and everybody's friends with everybody. So it's, I don't know, it's pretty cool. But in an area, a beautiful neighborhood just like that down in Troy, I've met this lady, and she knows nobody at all in the whole neighborhood. And it just seems unusual, because it's,
Yeah, it's a neighborhood.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you know everybody?
Right. So we'll take a break, and we'll be back.
The versatile Kubota B-Series is a do-it-all tractor. Run powerful attachments that can be easily switched out. It features a hydrostatic transmission, and is simple to maintain. The Kubota B-Series. It makes the hard work look easy. Talk to your local Kubota dealer today to schedule a demo.
Your local Kubota dealer is Hall Brothers in Fort Recovery, Ohio.
A new grill from a big warehouse is like trying to start your old grill. You can end up standing around by yourself and nothing happens. That's not what happens at Ace. Wengler Ace Hardware has an exclusive lineup of premium brands plus premium service from the people who know you best. We'll make sure you get the right grill, whether it's gas, wood pellet, or a flat top griddle. And better yet, we'll assemble and deliver it right to your patio. Don't forget, your newest grill is never far away, and neither is our help. That's why grilling starts at Ace. Stop by Wengler Ace Hardware in Fort Recovery, your grilling destination.
Looking to become a part of a company that uses the vision of their team members to assist them in becoming successful? Cooper Farms does just that. We utilize the ideas and visions of our team members to make our processes better, easier, safer today. The Fort Recovery Division of Cooper Farms is currently seeking individuals to fill open egg packaging and sanitation positions. To learn more about these positions, as well as other open positions, please visit cooperfarms.com/join our team. Cooper Farms, more than a workplace.
Our friends at New Knoxville are holding a special fundraising event featuring former Buckeyes and NFL linebacker and Big Ten Network broadcaster Joshua Perry. The event will be held at the Galleria in Salina on Saturday night, June 12th. Doors open at 4 and dinner will be at 6. Besides their guest speaker, Joshua Perry, there will also be live and silent auctions and a 50-50 drawing. The fundraiser is to help raise funds for their Raising the Barn 2.0, which is a school expansion project, including a new gym. Tickets are available by going to their Facebook page, The Barn 2.0, and clicking on the link. Here's a great way to have a fun night with former OSU linebacker Joshua Perry, and also help our friends at New Knoxville with their school expansion project, including their new gym. Saturday evening, June 12th, at the Galleria in Salina. Tickets available now by clicking on the link on their Facebook page, The Barn 2.0.
The Barn 2.0.
Kind of cut them off a little bit.
Yes, I did somehow. I'm not sure exactly what happened there, but that's going to be a pretty neat thing. So, more stuff for us there,
yep, Steve? Before the break, talking about bugs, and so we'll talk about bugs some more. Aphids have been out and about and creating a lot of bizarre-looking foliage. I actually found a bunch of aphids on my burning bushes this week and certainly have had zero time to worry about it or treat for it. So, you know, they're going to come and go relatively quickly, and I'm going to have some distorted, cupped, and curled-up foliage at the ends of the branches. But, again, if I had time, would I treat? Probably. Is it going to create any really long-term issues for those plants? No. The only reason I would treat is to just try to knock the population back, because they will probably come back next season. And if you keep year after year after year not treating, the population can get high enough that it can cause... I mean, it's not going to kill the plant, but it is going to create a lot of really unsightly... foliage that, again, is cupped, contorted, and accordioned, and looks lousy. Also, like I had mentioned last week, they will damage the foliage, and then their excrement will be all over everything, which is really sticky, and that attracts ants, and then that sticky, real sweet... poop, we'll say, will also create some not disease issues. It's a sooty mold. Well, I guess that is a disease. It's a sooty mold that will grow. So again, you know, the cooler temperatures are certainly going to slow their activity down. Maybe I'll have time on Monday. Who knows? But again, nothing to like get completely in an uproar about. Saw woolly aphids on some American elms, which, again, the population I saw was really, really, really small. So, you know, not completely worried that I would treat that. And then I think I had mentioned last week the birch tree, saw some birch trees that had aphids on them that was causing the foliage to accordion, so it was kind of folding over on itself. Again, it just gets to be there's a threshold where do I treat or do I not treat? And again, if the plant is completely infested, yes, I probably would treat. Is that particular insect going to kill the plant? No, it's not, but it can cause some significant defoliation, which can cause stress and stress over a longer period of time. Within a couple 3 years, is going to slow, hinder growth, and potentially open up an avenue for maybe something else to come in because the plant's weak and take it out. So again, the threshold for treatment, can vary from person to person. Some people, if they see, a half a dozen of them, they want to treat. The other person is like, well, if it ain't going to kill the plant, don't treat. And again, I always kind of err on the side of unless it's going to create a lot of long-term, potential long-term, adverse effects for the tree, then, the threshold is met that we would put an application on. If it's a slight infestation, it's not real bad, I certainly wouldn't spend the time to do that. Shifting gears a little bit, I think last week we talked about the really heavy seed production on maple trees, which are causing the maples to look really, really thin. They're sacrificing foliage. The trees are sacrificing foliage for the development of the helicopters or the samara, the seeds. And I'm seeing that all over. I mean, it's just not around here. For work, I'm traveling probably a 50-mile radius, and then I have connections that I talk to people all over the state. So I mean, it's something we're seeing everywhere, not just in our area, but super heavy seed production, which is promoting again very, very thin, almost like the thing's dying. You're seeing such few leaves coming out. Now the weather we're having now with cooler temperatures and some rainfall. The rain's been pretty erratic, sporadic, and I mean, they've been calling for, 90%, 80% for the last couple of days. I've only received maybe about an inch and a tenth, which I'm certainly not complaining about, but I know around the county I've talked to different people, and that amount's varied dramatically up and down depending on where you're at in the county, but I had maybe about an inch over the last couple of days with the showers blowing through. So that's going to be helpful for like the maple trees to, kind of reset things, cooler temperatures, some moisture. So they will eventually get some foliage out and look relatively normal, but it wouldn't surprise me that their canopies all summer might be just a bit thinner than they would be otherwise. I did have a call this week and went out and looked at a London plane tree, which is, I'm sorry, it was a sycamore. I looked at a sycamore. London plane trees in the same family, but looked at a sycamore. Sycamores are a native tree for us here in Ohio, and sycamores are the ones that they'll get absolutely enormous over time. And native trees, you're going to see them in wetlands, lowlands, along creek banks and river banks. They love wet soil, and so you're going to find them in lowland areas very commonly, all up and down, creeks and river banks all over Ohio. Some people claim they're dirty and they do drop branches. The leaves are sometimes as big as almost a bowling ball, so they're big. They do have an exfoliating bark, so they will drop bark and stuff in your yard, but they are a neat tree. When they exfoliate, they have the white stems and branches, not like a birch. Birches don't get very big. These suckers get huge. But I did look at one this week that was planted, I'm going to guess, maybe 10 or 15 years ago. And the person, lady, thought it was dying. She said, well, I think it's dead. And I went out and looked at it. And it absolutely isn't dead. It's got a foliage disease called anthracnose. And anthracnose will cause dead tissue, dead blotches in the leaves. In a maple tree, they might be maybe the size of an eraser on a pencil to maybe the size of a dime. On a big leaf, like on a sycamore, the patches can be like as big as a silver dollar or bigger. Anthracnose is a disease that will attack foliage and attack trees in the springtime when you have cooler temperatures and moisture. And sycamores are pretty susceptible to this particular disease, and it's not uncommon to see significant defoliation. And I was really surprised with this sycamore. It did look like fall. I mean, it put out all of its new leaves, and then all the new leaves got infected pretty much and defoliated, and she thought that it was going to die. And it absolutely is, for the most part, it was a relatively healthy tree. It's going to put out some new leaves, and it's going to be perfectly fine. But, you know, the trees aren't necessarily prepared to do two completely sets, new sets of leaves every season. So again, it does create stress. And if it gets defoliated every season, you know, two or three or four springs in a row, it's certainly going to compromise the tree. It's going to, you know, cause stress. It's going to weaken the tree. And so again, it could be more susceptible to issues. The problem you have with the anthracnose is by the time you notice the problem, it's much too late to put a fungicide on. You can put a fungicide on to control that particular disease, but by the time you're seeing the problem, and that goes for almost all diseases, whether it's a turf disease or, you know, a apple scab on a flowering crab apple, anthracnose on a sycamore, when you see the problem, then you apply your fungicide. Your results are going to be limited, mixed, poor, whatever adjective you want to use. It's just, is it help? Yes. Is it going to, you know, fix the problem? Not necessarily. When it comes to, you know, disease issues, preventative applications are always easier, cheaper, and more effective than doing like a curative type of an application. So if you're really concerned, in her case, if you're really concerned about that, you know, next season we would want to treat that maybe in, you know, mid to late April, as the leaves are just starting to emerge, get the fungicide on and try to get some protection for that plant so it doesn't happen. But once you start to see, the defoliation already happened and it's starting to put new leaves out. So putting a fungicide on at this point, it doesn't make any sense at all. Again, just some of the things I looked at this week. I think we need to take another break.
Yep.
And we'll be back.
All right.
Hi, this is Steve Stone from Nature's Green. And if you need any or all the quality products to get started on your lawn and landscape this spring, we have it at Nature's Green. Soils, mulch, flowers, vegetable plants, seeds, trees, shrubs, perennials, insecticides, fungicides, you name it, we have it. But most of all, we have the knowledge and expertise that will help you get through any project. Stop out and see us at Nature's Green and load up on everything you need, or we can deliver it. Just call us at 419-375-2322. Nature's Green, your landscape's best friend.
Proudly serving the Fort Recovery area for over 23 years, Fort Camp Excavating and Farm Drainage has the expertise to handle any dirt work you need. From installing waterways and building pads to demolition work and septic system installation, Fort Camp Excavating and Farm Drainage has all the equipment you need to get the job done right. Does your driveway need some fresh gravel, or do you need some dirt hauled in? We can take care of all your hauling needs as well. Give Brian a call at 419-852-6655. Fort Camp Excavating and Farm Drainage. Go Indians.
Memorial Day is the unofficial start of summer, and everybody's getting together with friends and family. Let Wayne Street Market be your headquarters for all the supplies you'll need to make your cookout great, from their great prices on their great steaks to their party trays, wine, beer, soft drinks, and snacks. Call ahead if you want larger quantities of their delicious roasted chicken and also for their party trays, and they'll have everything ready to go when you get there. Wayne Street Market will be open on Memorial Day from 10 to 4. Get everything you need for your Memorial Day party at Wayne Street Market, the hometown store that saves you more.
Reading at the Fort Recovery Public Library, and we are excited to begin our 2021 summer reading program, Tales and Tales, on June 7th. Whether you pick up a book about fairy tales, folk tales, or animal tales at the library this summer, you'll be sure to learn something new and have fun. We'll have some special story times with players from the Grand Lake Mariners and employees of Cheeseman Transport, and those are sure to be big hits with the kids. We have animal programs, music, games, crafts, and more planned for your summer reading program. A calendar of events can be found at the library. Some events will require registration, so stop by your library or call 375-2869. The summer reading program runs from June 7th through July 14th with a pool party and prizes for the young participants on Wednesday evening, July 14th, and adult prizes being drawn on Saturday, July 17th. A big thank you to the summer reading program sponsors, Psi Iota Xi Sorority, and the Friends of the Library. Get your kids involved in their annual summer reading program, Tales and Tales, starting Monday, June 7th at your library.
Welcome back to A Walk Through the Garden with Steve Stone, and we've been talking about bugs and stuff.
Bugs and stuff. We're going to change gears, and we're going to talk about lawns and stuff.
Okay.
So, I haven't talked about turf very much the last couple weeks. Obviously, again, you know, temperatures. It's amazing, you know, earlier last week, with the warmer temperature, you know, summer-like temperatures and no rainfall and warm, breezy days, turf was starting to show some, unless you were irrigating, I mean, a normal lawn was starting to show a little bit of summer stress or summer color. I was really noticing, like at my house along the road, the lawn was starting to kind of go off color just a bit and starting to see a little bit of you know, which isn't unheard of considering the temperatures we had, and you know, we didn't have any really, you know, significant rain events. So things were starting to dry up a little bit. I know I had some pretty sizable cracks in my yard in different places. And then we, you know, now we're back to, if you look at the extended forecast, we had about an inch of rain, and then you look into next week and we've got some really mild temperatures going forward, which is going to be perfect for, you know, Kentucky bluegrass. It's a cool season grass anyhow. So highs in the mid to high 70s and lows in the 50s is absolutely ideal growing conditions for that. So again, I noticed immediately with the inch of rain that we had and the cooler temperatures that the, you know, that my lawn, the places that were showing a little bit of thirstiness are gone at this point. So hopefully with the cooler temperatures, we'll extend our growing season, because you grow Kentucky bluegrass, you grow it in the spring and you grow it in the fall, and through the summer you just kind of hold on to your shorts and hope you can get through without it going dormant, because again, it really doesn't like 85 and 90 degree temperatures without consistent irrigation. It will start to go into, you know, like a drought stress or drought dormancy type of an effect. So again,
yeah, and when it does that, your lawn didn't die.
No, it didn't die. It's just,
although most people still, they think my lawn's died, I gotta, yeah, now I'm gonna have to replant and yeah, all that kind of stuff.
I mean, there's nothing, in my opinion, there's nothing prettier than a bluegrass lawn, but again, you're basically you have a limited growing season. You're going to be growing your bluegrass in probably late March, April, and May, kind of hold on to your shorts through June, July, and August, and then in September, October, and hopefully November. So you have about 5 months where it's really happy, and then you've got the rest of the months where it's not happy at all. So I don't know. I guess maybe that's why the turf-type tall fescues have gotten a little bit more popular over the last few years, because they'll definitely tolerate a hot, dry summer much better than bluegrass. But the color and the density and the texture and softness of bluegrass is pretty hard to beat, again, in my opinion. It is, you know, it is a great time right now to do your broadleaf applications. If you've got broadleafs giving you fits, mix up your 2,4-D. Your 2,4-D works great. Is it mixed properly? You can go right across all your, you know, your bluegrass lawn. Again, mixed properly. Don't go much more than about 4 ounces per gallon. There's, you know, better, I don't say better, there's other products out there like Trimac and Three-Way, and there's a lot of different types of broadleaf herbicides out there that are perfectly safe for your bluegrass or turf-type tall fescue, perennial rye lawns that will, again, you can spray right across your turf and you can get rid of all your broadleaf weeds and not damage your turf at all, mixed properly. So the Three-Way or Trimac is a very common over-the-counter name. It's been off patent for years and years and years and years and years, so there's a lot of different products out there, but basically that have a similar, have the same chemistry but maybe a different name. The Trimac is three different types of broadleaf herbicides that'll give you really good control. It's 2,4-D, MCPP, and dicamba, which may sound scary, but again,
should be scary to the weeds
if handled properly, mixed properly, and applied properly. Unless you got chlorophyll in you, is probably you're going to be perfectly fine.
And you're not downwind from it,
right? And so that's you can do, depending on how many weeds you have or how bad your weeds are, you can just spot treat your lawn, or you can do a blanket type of an application and get those things under control. And again, this is a good time of year to do that. I don't want to say it's the best time of year to do that, but it's a really good time of year to do that. The best time of year to do that application is probably going to be September. But certainly if you've got a lot of weeds, you do not want to wait till September to treat those. So that's why doing an application now is great. You want to be careful, you want to be careful with mixing properly. You want to be careful with what you're applying, right now as far as fertilizer goes. I wouldn't recommend really unless you're doing a new seeding, a new lawn, wouldn't recommend doing a really high, nitrogen, application or application rate with nitrogen right now. The temperatures will tolerate it. The grass will tolerate it. But when you fertilize late spring, early summer, and what you're going to be promoting is you're going to be promoting a lot of top growth. And that new, lush, fast-growing blades and new top growth is going to be horribly susceptible to diseases when we get into the heat and the humidity that we're certainly going to have through July and August. So you just want to be careful how you fertilize right now. You just don't want to go out and do a big heavy application because, again, if the weather stays like this, you're going to be perfectly fine. You're not going to have any disease concerns when the temperatures are as cool and mild as what they are right now. But when we get back into that 85 degree temperature range and the humidity starts ticking up, we're going to be ripe for dollar spot, brown patch, a lot of different types of pythium, a lot of different types of turf diseases. And again, lush, new, young growth is going to be a lot more susceptible to that those disease issues. So again, great time to put your broadleaf herbicide on. But again, be careful how you fertilize this time of year.
So if you're kind of wondering about it, as you've said several times, ask somebody that knows, not the guy selling
not the guy selling the seed and the fertilizer, because the guy selling the fertilizer thinks you need a lot of fertilizer.
But a lot of the people around here are going to be very honest with you. But don't go to Home Depot and ask that guy, because he number one, he probably has no more idea than you do, and his job is to sell stuff.
Yeah, he was working in the television electronics section before spring rolled around.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, or even that morning when the garden guy didn't show up,
called in. Oh, I'm hungover. I can't come in. So yeah, you just take into consideration where your information's coming from.
Yeah, and you're allowed to ask the people around here those kind of questions, even if their answer ends up being you don't need that right now.
Yeah,
they would much rather, I know you Eric, Judy, the people over in Colorado, they're all busy as can be. They don't need more stuff to do. They're not trying to sell you stuff you don't need. They're busy enough without doing things that aren't necessary.
Right. Yep. Well, I think we're done for the day. I got to get to work. So,
well, tell the boss I said if you're late, tell her I said it's okay.
Okay, I'll let her know.
Now, don't be going in at 9.
Oh no! Thanks everybody for tuning in.
Yep, we'll be back next week with more of Walk Through the Garden with Steve Stone.
Thanks for joining us again this week for a Walk Through the Garden with Steve Stone. If you have a gardening question you'd like Steve to answer, just email him at steve@naturesgreennursery.com and he'll answer it on a later show. Be sure to join us again next week for a Walk Through the Garden with Steve Stone.